This fall, choose Primavera Online, and you'll be choosing a school with flexibility, personalized support, and an award-winning curriculum that's over 20 years strong. Now enrolling grades K to 12 at ChoosePrimavera.com.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Meet Natural Cycles, the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app that's 100% natural, hormone-free, and side-effect-free. Here's how it works. The app analyzes daily changes in your body temperature to find your fertile window so you can plan or prevent pregnancy naturally. Natural Cycles is a clinically proven, non-hormonal birth control option that's 93% effective with typical use and 98% effective with perfect use. No synthetic hormones, just science. And if you're ready to start family planning, switching from preventing to planning a pregnancy is as easy as tapping a button. Plus, the Natural Cycles app makes tracking fertility easy. You can measure your temperature trends using an Oura Ring, Apple Watch, or our Bluetooth thermometer, which is free when you sign up for an annual subscription. Join over 4 million registered users who are taking control of their fertility naturally. Save 15% when you sign up with code RADIO15 at naturalcycles.com. That's Radio 15 for 15% off today.
Off and rolling Tuesday, September 9th, 2025 is the date. Welcome in to the Gabe Kuhn Show. I am your host, Gabe Kuhn, on X at G_Kuhn71. I'm alongside executive producer for the next couple of days until Connor returns on Thursday of this week. He's in Nashville. He's in Nash Vegas. George Ruggiero on X at King George. Pulling the hero shift today.
It's George, just two. It's it. Not a. It isn't
not
a,
the full hero shift. Not,
I've
not,
done
not,
that a
not,
couple times.
Not from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. Yeah. Okay. I hear you. But how you feeling? You doing well?
Good. Yeah. I'm loving it. We are back in business, and of course, as Connor usually plugs what he has going on, come on out tonight, 10th inning in South Haven. Play a little bit of music bingo with yours truly, of course, presented by Cerrito Entertainment. Come on down. It's a great time every time.
It's a great time. Okay. All right.
Come on now. We're all on the radio. I have to have something produced.
Okay. All right. Has Kevin given you the okay on it's a great time every time?
No.
Okay. That's just
that's
you.
Just,
that's off the cuff.
Yeah, that just rolls.
You're all around
off.
The city during the week, by the way. You Dan McGinnis.
Yep.
10th inning.
This week, I'm not at Dan's on Thursday. I'm at Slider Inn this week.
Okay. I love Slider Inn.
It's awesome.
I'm a fan.
Super cool venue.
Midtown or downtown?
Midtown.
Okay.
Yeah.
I got you.
So,
got you.
Big patio.
Yes.
Great time
yes.
to play some music bingo.
Yep. Absolutely. Join George. It's
Come
a
on
good
down.
Time. It's a great time.
It's a great time every time.
All right. Now, we have 3 hours of talk on the way, courtesy of 92.9 FM, ESPN, and yours truly. And right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, it's a great time every time. We have Monday Night Football to discuss, and I swear, I feel like I'm in the Twilight Zone with the conversation about both the quarterbacks that we saw last night. J.J. McCarthy on the Vikings side and Caleb Williams on the Bears side. But I'll explain more about what I mean in just a moment. Week one of the NFL season is wrapped up. We'll have a trip around the NFL at 5:30. Bottom half of this hour, I want to get into week three of college football. And I think there's a message going into the week that I want to try to get out there about the unknown that still is there when it comes to the top teams in the sport. I feel like the data points we have don't fully explain what we're going to see in a couple of weeks. But I will discuss that further here, bottom half of this hour. As far as guests are concerned, Jeff Calkins will join at 5 o'clock. Can't wait for that. I want to review his Bills win and how he... Did he watch the end of that game? I don't know if you heard my show yesterday.
I did.
Yeah, I was. After the Ravens.
Was this when it hit 40-25?
After the Ravens ran it in from 46 yards, Derrick Henry felt like he put the finishing touches in that fourth quarter on the game. Bills punt right after that. I went to sleep. And then I wake up to just multiple notifications on my phone about
all
how the Bills somehow
everything.
Won. And I go back and watch, and I go, how the hell did that happen? But I'm sure Jeff will revel in it and have some fun with it. Also, can I ask you this?
Yes.
Fluky? I thought it was very fluky when I watched it back. Not to take anything away from Josh Allen. 250 yards in a fourth quarter is unreal. 394 for the game. Great. He showed that he is the MVP. He continues to grow.
Yeah.
And Keon Coleman, awesome development for them. Eight catches, 112 yards, touchdown.
He was phenomenal.
Tip ball ends up in Keon Coleman's hands.
Yep.
Derrick Henry fumbles the ball,
which
never happens, and especially in that situation. He's a closer, not a guy who usually gives the game up. And then they miss
the starter. He does everything. He had already run for 200 or whatever.
Yeah, they missed the 2-point conversion, and then on the Bills did. They could have tied it up there.
Yeah, yeah.
Then on the ensuing possession, the Ravens throw the ball three times, and the clock gets stopped. It's just like I felt like it was fluky. I felt there was some fluke to that win.
Is this a fair statement? I think a good portion of why it felt fluky is because a lot of the mistakes, especially in like play calling and decision making, aren't the norm for a team like the Ravens, who are as well coached as they are. It was
right,
like,
right.
This doesn't happen that often. Like, they, why did
and
they
had
the
avoided
they
it. They had avoided it for 3 3/4 of the game. 3/4 and
so like
3/4 of the fourth.
55 minutes pretty much.
Yeah, like they avoided it the entire game, and then the last 5 minutes they just devolved.
Football. There you go.
It's a great sport, isn't it?
It's the best.
It's a great sport. But yeah, Jeff Calkins will join at 5. We do have another guest though. 6 o'clock, as normal on Tuesday, Christian Fowler will join the show.
What was your other question about Jeff? Do we think he actually finished watching the game?
Yeah.
No.
He's
knowing Jeff.
It would have been nice for him having.
It would
know,
have been great for him.
Yeah.
But do we actually think? Do you think?
I don't think there's any chance he did.
No.
He's got the earliest show at this station.
Oh,
one,
yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And two, he's one of those guys where if his team's out of it, he doesn't want to put himself through the misery.
It is off.
But it didn't become. It wasn't misery. It was not misery. He should have probably stuck through it, but we'll talk to him at 5 o'clock about it. All right. Now, Monday Night Football last night. Vikings win. Vikings win. They played horribly, and J.J. McCarthy, their starting quarterback, who we had a lot of questions about going into the game, played horribly for 3 quarters. Had a pick six, and on that pick six, by the way, George, one of the worst quarterback plays I saw of week 1.
It was,
did not look in the direction of anybody else, didn't so much as look off a linebacker, and tried to throw it out to the edge, and it got picked off going the other way by a special teamer in DeShaun Wright, much less. Like, he does not
primarily
start. He's primarily a special teams guy. And J.J. McCarthy gave him a gift. Hopefully he gets more playing time because of that.
Yeah.
But J.J. McCarthy played poorly through 3 quarters. Bears played decent through 3 quarters. 4th quarter, though, completely different script. Vikings score 21 points. Bears stink. And I think the entirety of last night's game was defined by a chess match between two veteran defensive coordinators and two great offensive play callers that have some limitations because of an inexperienced quarterback. Brian Flores and Dennis Allen, watching them dial up defenses last night was, to me, a joyous occasion. It was a joy to watch.
Chef's kiss.
I mean, it was
A-plus.
Gorgeous to see what they did with Caleb Williams' eyes if you're Brian Flores. Same thing with Dennis Allen. And, you know, it was my favorite matchup of the night. Constantly it was showing blitz and dropping, showing coverage and blitzing, mixing coverages, playing trap coverages, finding ways to really play with both of those young quarterbacks' eyes. It was phenomenal. Ultimately, by the end of the game, though, we learned that Brian Flores, he's going to show why he's talked about the way he is as a defensive coordinator and why he's one of the best in the game. Also, I know this was a very controversial call, and I'm an offensive lineman.
Oh, is it that?
I think Darnell Wright and the holding call, I put it in air quotes because it was not a hold. It was a trap technique. That's what you do. You knock the guy's arms down. You fall on top of him. It's not supposed to be a holding call. It's what you teach, and it's a great technique that Darnell Wright used, but it was called a holding call. I thought it changed the game. It was 1st and 10 from the Vikings 24. The Bears are up 17-6 in the 3rd quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get that holding call. They get into a bad situation behind the sticks. Caleb gets an intentional grounding. And then Cairo Santos, who does not have much of a leg, clearly, couldn't kick it out of the back of the end zone to end that game. He misses from 52 plays later. I thought that was really one of the inflection points that changed the game for the Bears for the worst and why they lost the game. And it was truly a terrible call.
That really was my question, really, because I'm pretty sure you and I both saw the same clip of that going around with who broke that down. I can't remember his name off the top.
Jeff Schwartz,
yes,
maybe, yeah.
Something like that.
Former offensive lineman, like Jeff Schwartz were.
The amount of people that were also saying, hey, the tackle next to him, or was it 73 in the same play committed?
Guard did not hold either. It was Jonah Jackson.
Wasn't holding.
He was inside.
It was all
good tight
in.
Technique, sat down. I mean, there was no hold on that play, yet it got called.
The biggest part of that, and the biggest thing that we saw in the second half, a lot more with the dialed-up defense that Flores, you know, put together, really ticked up the pressure up a notch in that second half, is the Bears were consistently behind the sticks. And you can't do that when, at times, your quarterback, especially with a new play caller, and it wasn't just that call, there were plenty false starts from receivers.
A lot
guys
of pre-snap
going,
penalties.
A lot of pre-snap things where clearly guys are still trying to get a grasp of what we all consider a pretty complex offense, I would think, that Ben Johnson likes to run. Lots of different wrinkles, things that you need to learn. You can't keep putting yourself behind the sticks like that, especially when you're having these struggles for a call that probably should not have been made.
Yes, 100%. And it needs to be said here as well, Ben Johnson, his decision at the end of the game on the Cairo Santos kickoff was bad. You have the 2-minute warning, 2 seconds away. You want to have that 2-minute warning timeout at your disposal, because what happened ultimately? The Bears stopped them in 3 plays and they got the ball back, but it was with 9 seconds instead of however much time would have been on
been more,
had they gotten
sure.
that 2-minute warning timeout.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I mean, butterfly effect. If you actually are able to get that 2-minute warning timeout, are you going to get the stops same way? Whatever. But he wanted to kick it out of the back of the end zone. Cairo Santos, I can tell you right now, he can't do that. He can't do that. he doesn't have the leg for it. My take was either go for the onside, try to steal a possession back,
sure,
or kick it out of bounds and play with the 2-minute warning. Like, there was two real decisions you had to make. I understand if you have the kicker that you trust to kick it out of the back of the end zone, go ahead and do that. But Cairo Santos isn't that guy, and he hasn't been for some time.
Now, this is just a general question because, one, we don't see it all that often. And with the new kickoff rule, it puts an offense further up the field. Where would kicking it out of the end – or not out of the end zone, excuse me, out of bounds would have given the Vikings the ball?
It's 40.
At the 40 still?
Same, unless, okay. unless you kick it
directly
sideways out of bounds, you get
sure.
it at the spot of where it went out of bounds.
Yeah. Okay.
But
that's what I was wondering. I was
you
like,
get it at the 40, like, not that big of a deal.
No, I mean,
as long as you get that 2-minute timeout.
From a touchback, that's only an extra, what, 5-10?
Yeah, well, it's 35
now
is where they get it from the
on a touchback.
On a touchback.
Yeah.
So, like, I would have taken that opportunity to kick it out of bounds. Play with a 2-minute warning timeout.
Clearly, though, they were very comfortable with Reichert's leg.
But, yeah, true. And shout out to the Vikings. This is what they did better than the Bears last night. Just execution, understanding situational football. Because in that situation, instead of taking a knee as you normally would when a ball is into the end zone, Ty Chandler looks to the sideline, sees his coach, sees KOC, Kevin O'Connell, saying, take it out. And he takes it out. I thought it
drains
was
the clock.
Wonderfully played by the Vikings, badly played by Ben Johnson and the Bears. Now, I'm going to take this time to send a message to Bears fans. Every time I watch your team, I grow an appreciation for you. Because I have a brother who works for Odyssey in Chicago, works for 670 The Score as a producer for Spiegel and Holmes. And what I've noticed about them, as well as the fan base, there's this hopeful feeling that comes and goes play by play. In this case, and this is how it's been for the past, I don't know, nearly a decade with that franchise. It hinges on the quarterback. It was Trubisky, It was Justin Fields. Now it's Caleb Williams. And through all of it, I find it an absolute miracle that you Bears fans haven't had a stroke by now. Or an aneurysm. That's mental resolve and mental toughness. I cannot even fathom what it would be like if the Bears were my team of choice in the NFL. It is misery every single time. Even when you have hope in a full first half, like last night. Even when you see that quarterback that you drafted first overall playing well, it all is going to fall apart at some point, but you still remain hopeful. And you don't struggle with mental health the way I expect you to. But that's something I have to say to Bears fans, because I watching that game and seeing how it played out like it normally plays out, no matter what Bears team I'm watching, it's tough to watch time and time and time again. And Bears fans sit through all of that.
Yeah, that hits a little bit close to home, too. Yeah. I feel that.
Oh, yeah. Shout out Jets fans.
Yeah, I feel that.
Actually, you might be a little worse off, huh? Longest playoff drought in the National Football League, huh?
Yeah. At least we've had a 4,000-yard passer.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You have. But so what has that gotten you?
Not a whole lot.
All right. Now, as for Caleb Williams, because that's the big topic today. A lot of people down on him. There's no question about it. If you go look at social media or if you watch just about any TV show, sports talk show, you'll see a lot of negativity about the guy. And I'll say this, I'm still hopeful, but he has problems. And he's had problems for quite some time. I brought these up when he came out of USC. And speaking of aneurysms, he about gave me an aneurysm trying to watch him play quarterback last night. The fluctuation between plays with Caleb Williams at this point, and I know it's Ben Johnson game one, but I saw this last year as well with Shane Waldron. It goes from franchise quarterback, top 10 quarterback, to UFL. That's the fluctuation we deal with play to play with Caleb Williams. And stick with me on this because I think it illustrates my feelings about Caleb Williams perfectly. Watching Caleb Williams is like taking the family drive to Florida, right? You have the two kids in the back seat, the two parents. Everybody's at each other's necks by about, you know, hour four, right? You have that 8-hour drive. You got to power through it. It may test your patience, but you tell yourself even an hour five when things are looking bleak and you've taken 15 bathroom breaks, you tell yourself, it'll be glorious once I just get to that damn Airbnb. Once I just get to that Airbnb, I'll have a cigar in my mouth. I'll be drinking a nice little drink.
Right next to the water.
Right on the water. That beach is going to just look great. The water's going to feel phenomenal. But that's how it feels. Right now, you're in the car ride on the way to Florida if you're wanting Caleb Williams to be what you expect him to be after being the first overall pick a couple of years ago. That's what I liken it to. And to explain sort of the Caleb Williams experience, I took a four-play sequence from the beginning of the fourth quarter. This is a four-play sequence he had. Second and 10, first play that I took. He throws a sidearm dot for a first down. Sidearm dot. With pressure in his face, he gets hit, throws it directly to the sticks, first down. Now he gets a first and 10. Second play in this sequence. Steps out of bounds for a loss of 4 while trying to make a play. Third one, right after that, he throws and drops an absolute dime to Rome Odunze. Now, did Rome Odunze drop it? Yes, but it was perfectly placed right on the sideline, out of harm's way from the defender that was defending Rome Odunze. It was just dropped. So it was a good play. And then the play right after that, third and 10, he throws a ball at least 6 or 7 yards over his receiver's head on a outbreaking route to the left side of the field. And it just shows the unpredictability of him as a young quarterback at this point. And my question becomes this with Caleb Williams. How close are we to the consistent, stable, able to play on schedule Caleb Williams? How close are we? Because here's my opinion on it. It better be close. How much more development needs to happen for Caleb Williams to get to where he needs to be that 4,000-yard passer, to be that Bears franchise quarterback, to be that guy that wills the Bears into the playoffs? Because I think the biggest thing for me is the unpredictability of his play has to change and change fast. People say development of the quarterback position has changed, and I agree to a certain extent with that. In college, we run gimmicky offenses. In the NFL, you just don't have quarterback coaches and OCs that want to deal with developing guys, and that's why I say developmental runway has changed more than anything. You no longer have those 4-year projects and waiting around. You don't sit there and take all this time to get that quarterback where you want him to go. They have to be there in a couple of years, right? Year two, which is what Caleb Williams is in now, is usually the inflection point for most young quarterbacks coming into this league. And to be honest with you, it's a pass-fail system. I don't know which side of that Caleb Williams is on right now, but I can give you some examples from the past. Year two, Joe Burrow, pass with flying colors. Josh Allen, pass with flying colors. Lamar Jackson, you remember his rookie year compared to year two? Year two, he won an MVP. That was a pass with flying colors. But also, on the other side, Zach Wilson, year two, fail. You know that pretty well.
Yep.
Kenny Pickett, year two, fail with the Steelers. Mm-hmm. He's been traded all around the league. He's getting passed around now. Anthony Richardson, year two. Daniel Jones.
Is he having a year two?
Dear Daniel Jones looks like an absolute dog, but he lost his job in training camp of year two. Fail. Trey Lance, year two with the 49ers. Fail. Here's Brock Purdy coming along. He makes some things happen for them, and he's now the $55 million man. So the question is, which way does it go with Caleb Williams? Because I know people will laugh at this, but I look at the Tyson Bagent preseason, and I look at the extension he got before the season. And you may think it's funny business. You may think, oh, they're just doing him a solid. Look at how thankful he was for the organization. He cried at the press conference when he got that 2-year, $10 million extension. But I don't think that the conversations about Tyson Bagent and the extension and how well he played in the preseason, I don't think that's all smoke and mirrors. I think that if Caleb Williams continues to make the mistakes that he made last night down the stretch, if we get halfway through the season, week 8, week 9, I don't think Ben Johnson is going to take a whole bunch of time. I think he will switch to Tyson Bagent until Caleb Williams proves him otherwise. It's a very strange situation right now. I'm still hopeful for Caleb Williams, but there are things that need to change fast. And to me, the one word that he needs to change to the inverse is the unpredictability. He needs to be way more predictable, way more on schedule.
One big thing as well that I think needs to be stated as well to contextualize this, especially when we look back for a guy like Caleb Williams, who had the same play caller, the same offense all through college, which someone that has put good Link. NFL talent, Lincoln Riley, great quarterback guy that we think has done really well in the NFL, putting quarterbacks into the league. And then he gets to the Bears, had
Terrible situation.
Not enough around him in year one.
And there was decent around him. It's just the terrible situation has to do with the coaching staff.
Well, this is exactly where I'm going.
Eberflus and Waldron.
Exactly. So he goes from Shane Waldron that, at this point, he's not coaching somewhere right now. Correct me if I'm wrong.
I don't think so.
He is. Goes from that system, puts up numbers that we would look at and say, you know what, for that, not the worst. We've seen worse. We've definitely seen worse in a year one. And then immediately has to turn around, learn an entire new offense. But thing is, this is a similar script, a similar context,
right,
a similar background to more than a handful of those guys that you just said, hey, you look at year two for a couple of those guys, did not look so great. And that's a pretty similar, pretty similar program, pretty similar things going on around them. In a way, though, you would like to think a guy who went number one overall clearly has the talent that Caleb Williams does.
And a guy that Dan Orlovsky and guys called the most generational prospect, the best quarterback prospect that'll be taken at number one since Andrew Luck. That's the type of expectation he had attached to his name. So I get why people are down on him, but I don't know if they took in the full picture last night. And if taken in the full picture of what he's come into the league with. They have tried to build around him, but I thought they failed in year one with the coaching staff. And this year, it's a learning curve. I think he's got everything in place, and it's now on him to really get it going. And I know I'll get pushback on this, but I'm going to say it. I think this is almost the pseudo-rookie year for Caleb Williams because now everything is fully in place, and he has to show it. He has to make something happen. Everyone can realistically give him a pass for last year, almost wipe that clean, even though it was decent statistics, bad outcome for the team.
Yeah.
But this year's almost a pseudo-rookie year for him because everything he needs is in place. Now it's on him to make something happen. On the other side, though, last night, and I get this is probably why he's getting praised today, not just for the fourth quarter he had, but I thought J.J. McCarthy's predictability very much offset Caleb Williams' unpredictability. And some people will say, oh, my gosh, Gabe, you threw a pick six. What do you mean predictability? Well, this is what I mean by predictability. If you run the rock and you have a good run game, he's very effective. If you don't run the rock and you have a bad run game, he's bad. He's really bad. And to illustrate this, first half, the Vikings rushed for 35 yards. That's all they could do on the ground.
Woof.
And four of the five drives that J.J. McCarthy manned up were three and outs.
Pretty quick ones, too, for the most part.
Second half, Vikings open it up a little bit on the ground, rush for 85 yards. They score 21 points. Like, it is as predictable as it gets. And I kid you not, this is exactly what happened last night. Jordan Mason broke what was the biggest play from scrimmage for the Vikings at the beginning of that fourth quarter. It was 18 yards. It was an 18-yard run to start the fourth. J.J. McCarthy threw a touchdown pass to Justin Jefferson right across the middle. Really good throw in coverage. He was almost blanketed. But he threw that touchdown pass four plays after the 18-yard rush. And from there, he didn't really slow down. And I tipped the cap to J.J. McCarthy and Kevin O'Connell for making it happen last night. And here's the stat that J.J. McCarthy has attached to his name now. He became the first starting quarterback with a 10-plus point fourth quarter comeback in his NFL debut since Steve Young in 1985. Good company to keep.
Great company.
And he is the only such quarterback since 1950, 75 years ago, to do so on the road in his NFL debut. Good game. I don't think it was great by any stretch of the imagination. I think all of the praise that he's getting today is a little bit much. And I think all of the hate and the vitriol that Caleb Williams is getting is a little bit much. But you know what I chalk that up to, George? Week one, we overreact with the best of them. It's just what we do as a society.
It's just part of the gig. And I mean, really, you could look at J.J. McCarthy in that game, the first three quarters, and if it was just like that the entire game,
he was the worst quarterback in the National Football League.
He was
this week
awful
through three quarters,
awful. And a lot of this, what I'm going to say, comes from a lot of, you know, other people that have watched, other people, and you know, people on this station. I think the biggest thing we can look at as a big positive, not just with J.J. McCarthy, but who is leading that Vikings team and J.J. McCarthy. Kevin O'Connell he's the guy. He's got it. Because at no point in that game, and you would have expected it the entire night, go down the way they did early in that game, played as poorly as they did in that first half, at no point did you see him start throwing things, getting pissed off on the sideline. They even asked him before, or it was either before or after halftime, hey, how do you think this is going to go? And he's like, you know what?
We're going to get back in the game.
We're going to get back in this. I can do a better job with this. But at no point did he seem to lose confidence in his guy, and it panned out like it has with every quarterback that has played for him, pretty much.
Yes, and
just think
I need honesty from you.
Astronaut.
I need honesty from you.
Yeah.
Even after watching the first three quarters, was there any doubt in your mind that the Vikings were going to stay down in that game and not figure it out? I always had the sense they were going to figure it out.
Oh,
it's the Bears. It's the Bears week one.
It's not even about the opponent as much as it was at this
point.
Well,
to me it is. If they're playing the Rams or the Chiefs, it's a different conversation. You get down early against one of those teams,
that's
you feel a little
they,
differently. But you see the Bears out there, or the Jets, sorry.
They tend to pile on those other teams.
You feel
they tend to pile on a little bit, too.
You feel a little bit different.
Sure.
It's like, okay, you know, it's been bad to this point, but Kevin O'Connell's a good coach. And what really struck me about last night, and I'm getting into the weeds a little bit with schemes and everything.
Sure.
But to get back in that game, there was nothing special that Kevin O'Connell really dialed up. I know he gets a lot of praise, and for good reason. He does a really good job with his offense, really good job with whatever quarterback's behind center. But it was inside zone run schemes. It was play action passing, and it was screen passes. That's all it was. It just was executed better. And J.J. McCarthy took it upon himself once the run game got going to really take advantage of what he had at his disposal. Like, it was nothing special, but it worked out really well for the Vikings in the end.
And that isn't to take anything away from it. I mean, at the end of the day, he kind of stuck to his gun, stuck to his game plan, which, in a way, it's a little different than last year. Sam Darnold was able to air that thing out at times last year.
Yeah, and he was ready to go from
jump.
Immediate. First kickoff of the season, he was ready to go. Yeah, Jay McCarthy, it's a little bit different.
Yeah, and that's perfectly fine.
Understandably so.
I mean, literal rookie year.
Yes.
Not assumed or...
He's not played organized or competitive football in 21 months. I think it's pretty understandable why the first three quarters look like they did. But that first three quarters that he had, those need to be the only three quarters he have that look like that this entire season. That was 32 out of 32 starting quarterback stuff. That was bad. That was really bad through three quarters.
But then
he figured it out.
And I think it's telling with the praise that everyone is giving, not just J.J. McCarthy, but the Minnesota Vikings as well, what we all think of that staff, the team that's built around J.J. McCarthy. It's telling that we're all saying, you know what, first three quarters, sure, we can set that aside. I think we'll see better the rest of the season.
Yep.
That tells me less about JJ than it does about the situation that he has landed himself in.
Yep, for sure, for sure. All right, now, week three of college football is going to be on the way coming up this weekend. We're hyped up for it.
Mm.
But I need to pose a question to you, and we need to answer this question on the other side. Do you have any idea what's going on? We'll grab a break. This is the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. So Connor and I touched on it briefly yesterday, but we learned that the college football playoff was targeting former Memphis coach, former Virginia Tech coach, my former coach, Justin Fuente, to be the college football playoff senior advisor for football. He's officially taking the position. There was an announcement and a press release today, so shout out to him. I would imagine the question that everybody has is, does this affect his TCU color commentating? And my answer would be, I would imagine so. I'd imagine that they're going to have to find another color commentator. I don't know how quickly he's going to start this job. I'd imagine he'd hit the ground running here relatively soon. Now, this is a new position, the College Football Playoff Senior Advisor for Football. And within the press release, this is what was said about the role. And I want to try to dig through what the hell this means, because we know that statements put out about a new role usually, I mean, it's a bunch of word salad. In this newly created role, Fuente will be responsible for providing guidance on designated operational matters that enhance the overall quality of the CFP, including consulting with FBS conference offices, NCAA National Coordinator of Football Officiating, and the CFP's Chief Medical Officer. He will also work with the CFP staff on the implementation of playoff policies and best practices related to game operations, officiating, technology, and other policy considerations. Word salad. I don't know what this role is. It just means that, hey, we need a football guy in here to help take care of football matters, right? Like, that's about the gist of what I read there,
yeah.
George. Do you have any other takes?
When I first read the full statement, I was like, okay, that's...
Okay.
That exists now. Good job,
but
Justin.
I mentioned it yesterday. He had no interest of ever getting back into like collegiate head coaching. And I don't even think he really had interest in being like an OC, especially at the FBS level or the Power Four level. Just because I don't think he really likes the new direction and how settlement NIL era of college football. But good for him to land a gig within the sport he loves that removes him at least a little bit from having to deal with 17 and 18 year olds asking for $1.5 million. You know what I mean? Like, I think this ended up being a good landing spot for him post coaching career for the most part. I still, based on what I read, have no earthly idea what his actual role and what he can actually, you know, tell the CFP to do. I don't really get that part of it, but if they're going to pay you to be what is tabbed as college football playoff senior advisor for football, okay, give me the money.
I mean, I wonder, is he just going to end up being the guy in front of the mic?
That would be interesting.
It would be.
I don't know if you're familiar. I mean, you're a little younger. Like, when he was at Memphis, you were, how old were you? 20, I'm not trying to.
No, you're good.
Yeah, 2014, 2015.
Oh, wow, that was 10 years ago?
Between 2012 and 2015, yeah.
So, give or take 10 years.
High school?
Yeah, 17.
Yeah, so I don't know, if he became the guy in front of the mic, having to explain the faults of the CFP committee.
Don't know how well that would go.
I don't know if he handled that very well. I guess you could term it the best of both worlds.
Yeah,
when it came to dealing with the media between Mike Norvell and Fuente.
Yeah,
Mike Norvell was the chipper. Hey, I want to get these media members involved.
They
want
to be on my side.
I want them on my side. I'm going to have Jeff Calkins call plays at the spring game. Gary Parrish, you're going to be on the other side. Like, that's what he did. Fuente was basically, he came across as the curmudgeon. Now, he would tell you how it is, and I think there was a genuineness to him. But he was never good at just, like, getting in front of the camera and being super articulate about how he feels and why decisions were made. He usually just sort of gave you the coach speak answers, no more than two sentences at a time. I can't imagine he'll be the guy in front of the camera, but if he is, I would be interested in that. I don't know if the rest of the country would be.
Maybe not. I mean, it does not sound like he was the guy who was ever going to tell his story, which I know the CFP would want him to do.
Yeah.
He's just going to tell it like it is.
Yeah, the first time they're like, oh, why is Florida State ranked ahead of, yada yada in this week's college football playoff poll? Because we wanted it to be that way. I mean,
We voted
that way.
We looked at it.
What do you know? You don't know anything.
Tommy's playing pretty good ball right now, so, you know, we decided to slide them up a little bit, and that's where we're at.
Yeah, he would not give very good answers. Social
or
media.
Maybe the best answers.
Social media would go nuts with Justin Fuente in front of a camera trying to explain the decisions of the college football playoffs. So I don't think that's his role, but he's going to advise. I love advisors. Advisors are the best. What does that mean? What does that mean for the CFP? Is he going to advise? He's going to advise them on medical matters. He's going to be talking to the chief medical officer of the NCAA. He's going to advise them on technology. Yeah.
Big tech guy.
Justin Fuente,
big tech guy.
But good for him, man. Great gig to land and happy.
No more
very
in
happy.
No more
in
helmet
coach.
Communications. Everything back on paper. let's ride.
Yeah, you can't. No more film on the sideline. We don't have TVs or tablets set up.
No iPads. Nothing.
Yeah, we're going back to the old school. And by the way, everyone has to run the wishbone going forward.
If I don't see at least half of FBS running triple option, rioting.
All right. Moving on. I know before the break I teased this in a way that probably was confusing to some, but I'm going to bring it back for you. Week 3 of the college football season is coming up, and we have some pretty good matchups this week. Georgia and Tennessee, that should be very fun to watch, although I don't know how fun to watch. I'll elaborate on that more in a second. We'll have Clemson and Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech looks like a damn good team. Clemson has floundered through the first 2 weeks of the season, including a 16-3 halftime deficit against Troy, who Memphis plays this week. Alabama loses to Florida State. Next week they beat whoever it was, UL Monroe, 73-0. Now they play Wisconsin. Wisconsin's starting quarterback, I think he's out, although he's been sort of listed as questionable by Luke Fickell. And then, of course, you have South Florida, Miami, Arkansas, Ole Miss, Florida, LSU, A&M, Notre Dame, Vandy, South Carolina. There's some good matchups out there. And the way that I prefaced it before the break was, does anyone know what the hell is going on? And I really mean it when I ask that question. And I'm not talking about Ohio State or Penn State or Oregon. I'm not really talking about the Big Ten at large, although you could group them in certain teams into this conversation, but especially in the SEC. Do we have any real semblance of understanding of who has the inside track to be at the top of that conference? Do we have really any semblance of understanding of what this Georgia-Tennessee game is going to look like? Do we have any semblance of understanding about Arkansas and Ole Miss and how that's going to look? Because we've gotten some data points through 2 weeks, and I don't think it's, you know, a crazy thing through 2 weeks of the season to not have a full grasp on what you're watching. But this year, it feels like the data points are all over the place, and I don't quite have a grasp for what these matchups coming up this weekend are going to look like. Do I think we learn a lot this weekend based on how these matchups go? Yes. If Tennessee takes it to Georgia, I will feel differently about what Georgia will be at the end of the year. If Ole Miss flounders and looks bad and Talen Green looks like he has the first 2 weeks against Alabama A&M and Arkansas State, where Arkansas fans are over the moon, that he's like, oh, he's in the Heisman conversation because he's thrown for 300 yards a game and he's running for 100 yards a game. If he looks like that and they beat Ole Miss, I know what to think about Arkansas at that point. But as we sit here on a Tuesday, I ask you, George, do you have any semblance of understanding of what we're going to see this weekend?
I have not a clue.
I swear to you.
Not a clue. And even if we just narrow it down to the SEC, right? Okay, Alabama hosts Wisconsin. Do you know what's going to happen there?
No.
What's Ty Simpson going to look like?
No, I have no idea.
What's Wisconsin going to look like?
And here's the other thing.
Bad football.
Here's the other thing about Alabama. I don't know how good Florida State is. I want to think that they're back on top. I want to think that they're good. But they played an FCS game immediately following that Alabama game. So I don't. And it was 77-3.
Come on.
I don't know what to think about that. It was who was it that they East Texas A&M formerly?
Oh, they played
Texas A&M Commerce.
Yes. TAMC.
What do I do with that data point? Yeah, Tommy Castellanos looked good. Deuce Robinson looked great. Of course he did.
Shocking.
Yes.
Oh.
So I don't know what Alabama is because UL Monroe is a bad FBS team. It's just, it feels like to me, and I'm not going to go full, because I think you have to get into conference play to have the, okay, this is separation week conversation. Like,
sure, and not all of these teams are there yet.
I feel like this weekend, to a certain extent, is going to give us a broader understanding of who's going to separate themselves in the SEC. Who's going to be at the top when it's all said and done? Who are the teams that we can really stake our claim in to win a national title this year? Clemson versus Georgia Tech is going to be a telling game at Georgia Tech. Georgia-Tennessee should be a pretty telling game. Tennessee's looked good through 2 weeks, but who have they played? Do you believe in Syracuse? Syracuse ran after a game. Ran after the game.
Because they almost lost to UConn.
But Joey Aguilar, although we had questions about him, has looked good through 2 weeks. Ole Miss and Arkansas, on Arkansas' side, I've been very impressed with what I've seen against Alabama A&M and Arkansas State. But on the Ole Miss side, I was a big believer in Austin Simmons, and I've been let down and kind of disappointed through 2 weeks. But that could all change this weekend when they play each other. LSU, Florida. Florida loses to South Florida. How good is South Florida? And conversely, LSU beat Clemson. That's what they're staking their claim to. But I just watched Clemson have a halftime deficit to Troy at home 16-3 last week. So what really is LSU? Brian Kelly was very disappointed with their performance last weekend. So, needless to say, what the hell is going on in college football? I feel like this weekend is a very, very big inflection point for the season.
Do you want the running theory that Jeffrey and I have been going off of, especially with the SEC? Our running theory, which not even as much of a theory as much as it is, like just a belief, you know, it's very anecdotal based on what we've seen, with especially with the young quarterbacks for a lot of these top teams, or new quarterbacks coming in learning a system, the bottom of the SEC is starting to trend back towards the middle, which the middle there, it's pretty thick, and it's still solid ball teams.
And here's the thing. And the top Big Ten and SEC, not to cut you off, but Big Ten, very good at the top. I trust those teams more.
Yes, absolutely.
Bottom, or like from about four on, don't know what the hell I'm looking at, and usually not that great. SEC, I think, has shown, because if you look at the Power Four record they've had in the non-com, they're 8-2. That's by far the best record. But the losses were loud, right?
Yes.
The losses were loud. Texas loses to Ohio State and Alabama loses to Florida State. Those are the two losses you're looking at. But every other game, they have beaten their power conference opponents. So I think the SEC, even at this point, 2 weeks through the season, I think they've shown that it's like normal.
The depth and the parity is still
there. They may not
have
the top end of the Big Ten as it has been the last 2 years, but I think the parity and from top to bottom, they're better.
And that's kind of where we're leaning with it. And it's the fact that this is also with the current era of college football that we're in, where all of these SEC schools have some coin. They have a little bit of money to play around with for their football program. I mean, for example, the big one there, look at Mississippi State. Mississippi State, a lot of us were looking at saying, hey, you know what? We don't think they have as much of the talent as a lot of these other SEC schools. We expect them to be at the bottom of the conference, right?
Yep.
They go out last weekend and they just beat.
They beat the preseason favorite in the Big 12.
Yeah.
And a team that almost beat Texas in the college football playoff last year. Now, Cam Scataboo, but still.
Sure.
Number 12 team in the country.
That Mississippi State team is much improved from last season, and it's just by picking up some of these players that feel a bit more like SEC players.
And here's the thing. They very well could end up in the last place spot in the SEC when it's all said and done. Not to hate on you Mississippi State fans
listening
to the show, but it's just the truth of the matter. Them or Kentucky, still my pick to be at the bottom of the SEC.
And even there, Kentucky, every single year with Mark Stoops, they are a frisky team no matter who they're playing against. They always put out a good defense. Depending on who the quarterback is, they could have great offense, bad offense, almost always a good run game. They're always going to be in the mix in just about every game, and they could still end up at the bottom of the conference.
Yes. But I don't want to call this weekend separation week, but I think it's an inflection point for the season, especially in regards to the SEC and what our view of these teams is going to be going forward. Ole Miss, Arkansas, I'm going to be paying very close attention to. LSU, Florida, very close attention to. South Carolina, Vandy, a sneaky one. Vandy's looked awesome through 2 weeks.
It's that Diego factor.
Beat the hell out of Virginia Tech, 44-20 last week. And then, of course, obviously the marquee matchup for the most part is that Georgia-Tennessee matchup.
In the SEC.
How does that look?
Don't forget, what's the other big night matchup this
weekend?
Notre Dame
and A&M.
Hosting A&M. What is A&M? What is Marcel Reed look like?
What's Notre Dame? What's Notre Dame?
There you go. And that's another playoff team, premier team. Sure, they took that week one loss to Miami, but we all think Miami looks pretty good, right?
Isn't it kind of funny? With all of the great matchups we had in week one, we figured, okay, we'd have some semblance of understanding. And we didn't really get any type of grasp of what we were watching and what these teams were.
I can tell you one clear thing based on their two games so far. Virginia Tech stinks. They are terrible.
Can we have the Brent Pry conversation needs to happen sooner rather than later. they've been waiting for Brent Pry and Kyron Drones, their quarterback. To be like, you know, to take the ACC by storm for, 3 years now? And they still stink.
Like, sure, you could look at the first half against Vandy, and you're like, okay, that's pretty good. We looked through the second half, It was a drubbing. Yeah, it was bad.
And it is the Virginia Tech situation is such a strange thing because Frank Beamer was so good and so consistent for so long. And even in those days, they weren't getting 4- and 5-star recruits. They didn't lead the nation in blue chip rate. So it was very clear to me that entire time Frank Beamer was making the most out of very little. But now that he's gone and we're in the house settlement NIL era, Virginia Tech's not some hugely funded bankrolled program.
They're not opening the vault.
But you still have the leftover Beamer ball expectations and that unbelievable fan base. I'll give credit to Virginia Tech fan base. They show up in Lane Stadium every single weekend. It's a tough situation. It's one of the tougher situations right now in college football looking at it because you still have those leftover expectations, and I don't think going into the future anyone's really going to be able to meet them. And I think even if you get a guy that's going to step into that role and win 9 games and compete for the ACC, I think it's more of a stepping stone job to another big job than it ever has been before.
That situation, especially where we are right now and looking forward to the next, I'm going to say 5 to 6 years, because we're all talking about realignment, that is going to be one of the very interesting cases for realignment. Because what if, I mean, we all look at it right now and we're like, oh, they're not great.
This fall, choose Primavera Online, and you'll be choosing a school with flexibility, personalized support, and an award-winning curriculum that's over 20 years strong. Now enrolling grades K to 12 at ChoosePrimavera.com.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
I'm done with subscriptions. Streaming, fitness, razors, vitamins. I've got subscriptions for everything in my life. They lock you in, and half the time, I can't figure out how to unsubscribe. That's why I'm so excited about the new Blue Apron. Now you can get delicious meals delivered with no subscription needed, including new pre-made options. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first 2 orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Honestly, I wasn't sure we could pull this off ourselves.
You had the vision, and Blinds.com brought your dreams to life.
Yeah, their custom window treatments and free design consultation. Total game changer. Ava walked us through everything. Styles, colors, what would work best in this space.
And we didn't have to leave the house. Free samples showed up fast, and they made it super easy to compare and choose.
Right? Plus, no high-pressure sales pitch, just smart guidance. And the install? I thought it'd be tricky. But Blinds.com instructions were clear. Everything fits perfectly.
And thanks to their SureFit guarantee, if something doesn't fit, they remake it for free. Talk about peace of mind.
And it costs way less than having a designer to our house or going to one of those overpriced showrooms.
We saved money, got the exact look we wanted, and we did it ourselves.
We did it.
So, kitchen windows next?
Blinds.com makes buying and installing window treatments easy and affordable because nobody covers windows better than Blinds.com. Visit Blinds.com now for up to 45% off with minimum purchase. Rules and restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.